Computer Weekly covers the IT industry, and in the olden days being the 60s and 70s, there were mainframes, and the IT people loved the mainframe. You were in total control of the system, and everyone had to ask you for the data and whatever. Then the PC came along, and that freed up everyone, but the PC was actually very expensive. I think Gartner did some research and showed it was about $8,000 a year per PC.
Wow.
And what we end up today is with a locked down desktop. And that means you can't actually access anything, you can't do anything unless IT says you can. So it's a bit like the old mainframe. But this doesn't reflect how people are working today. What I'd like to ask you both is, how do we get out of this? What's your advice to, first to the IT people, and then generally to the business people?
Well, we began the premise of the book by first saying, let's give the advice to the individuals because they're getting screwed by IT. So we're going to come back to another question later about how do we focus on the individuals. For IT, what we're trying to help them understand is the cost-benefit scenario that they're creating by focusing on risk management and security. We have to have secure desktops. We get that. However, they're doing zero analysis of how much work that is offloading onto each individual. So one of the things we would ask IT professionals to look at is a true assessment of what is the work that is being offloaded onto each individual because of their risk situations. They create all of these situations that are about managing that risk, but they don't realize they're increasing the average workload by X number of hours a day for everybody. It can be anywhere from 15 minutes to 4 hours more per day to ensure that IT gets its goals achieved, but that decreases organizational efficiency and productivity because the average worker is less efficient. So we need to begin with an assessment of what is the work that's being offloaded because of the way you're designing the system. And then can we achieve the system design differently? Then once you do the assessment, it's also really the biggest barrier is not technology, it's our resistance to change. That the capability is there to create secure environments, we just need to do it differently than IT is currently doing it.
Now, Joel, one of the things that the book mentions is the idea that the corporation kind of controls what its staff does, and the systems that they put in place are a means of doing that, and people are kind of working against it. What's your experience of that, and what's going to happen? I mean, will everything collapse because the corporate culture will collapse because people will just go off and do their own thing, or they just won't work for corporations anymore?
Right. Well, both probably. I mean, there's two ways. It's not necessarily a collapse so much as a dissolution. So, like you were talking about IT and the challenges that they face, anyone that's been doing IT security knows that it's not been getting any easier. And as we increasingly move to the SaaS model, as the browser becomes the primary access point, it's harder and harder to lock things down. Now with HTML5 and everything else, you know, it's not going to get easier to control the desktop of our users. Same time, the users are getting increasingly savvy. You know, like my mom recently told me, oh yeah, you know, I found out about this thing called GitHub. You know, I think I'm going to, you know, store my recipe book I'm putting on there. Which, you know, when your mom is using GitHub, it tells you a little bit, telling you about the accessibility of modern technology, right? So, individuals are getting much more powerful. Companies are locking things down more, particularly in response to the economy and, you know, fear and whatnot. So what's going to happen? Well, I think what's going to happen is that we need to start acknowledging that the individuals are really more important and that the companies need to support them more than try and control them.
I think Ray Ozzie was talking about the end of the PC era. And there's a thing or two about PCs.
A little bit.
Or Lotus 1-2-3 and all of that. And today we have the iPhone and the Android devices, and they empower you. In the palm of your hand, you can access all sorts of data.
Right.
And I use stuff like Dropbox, for instance, to move data around seamlessly. These devices are very, very smart. So I think the corporation still requires you to do things in a very, very structured way. Many people find quite limiting. Well, in the military, you have the idea of reputation and classified data and stuff like that. So if you've been a good individual and you've worked really hard, you get 3 stars, and that means you can access a particular document. So, and the idea of this human firewall, but we trust people. We trust people to use YouTube. We trust people to use Facebook. And that trust enables that we give them certain bits of data, and if they're okay with that and they haven't embarrassed the company, they get a bit more access to the systems.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think people would buy into that?
It's already the case. I mean, from a business perspective, this is how functional hierarchy works. Right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's how human society evolved, right? Is in fact, talking about virtualized currencies or some of the new things that we're seeing around reputational economics. For most of human history, we've become very good at determining whether I should trust you or not. If I would give you 20 quid, or if I would loan you a pen, you know, intuitively we do very well at this sort of valuation. Companies generally evolve by responding to things that have gone wrong and trying to prevent those things from happening ever again. Mm-hmm. So you end up in a company today which has rules that say don't put your steam engine next to the filing cabinet, right? Well, no one has steam engines anymore, so the rules are completely obsolete. Well, that's happening now. It's just happening much, much, much faster. So don't, use the same password in your Lotus Notes account as you do in your Gmail account. Well, okay, that makes some sense in principle. Obviously, you should have different passwords, but in general, there are new technologies out there. How are you going to control that? Well, you've got to use some trust.
Mm.
So what happened when, let's go back 100 plus years, when we shifted into the industrial era, we took craftsmen off their farms and we put them in big barns and we built machines for them to get things done. And we're still continuing this model even though it's broken. For example, we're still continuing the educational model of September to June based on an agrarian society. So, I mean, it's not necessarily wrong to go back and look at history being so out of date and we should be changing. In the same way that the school educational model is based on an agrarian society and we're still doing it, the work situation that we're still operating on is still industrial, which is the corporation owns the material, the work processes, the work tools to get the work done. So they said, I'm the dad, I know what work needs to get done, I'm in charge of that. You are in charge of the processes as long as you follow these rules. And you can use our tools as long as you follow these rules. What's happened, now that we have totally moved almost completely into a knowledge and service work economy in most first world economies, what's happening is knowledge and service work is much, much more dependent on each individual. So we still have not reinvented the industrial model from I, the corporation, own the tools and the structures and the processes, too. I need to be able to send out tools and processes to the collaborative and let them figure out the best way to use it, and I need to operate as if I have a collaborative of 1,000 individuals. So we're still running our processes based on an industrial model. Now, there's been talk for 30 years about this being outdated. It hasn't changed, because the institutions can still make money this way, and it's still risky to break that down. What we're finding in our discussions with the people we interviewed is they're saying, the individuals are saying, okay, fine, I'll go along with some of your processes, but these ones over here are killing me. I'm just going to hack around these. Screw you. I'm not going to tell you about it, but I'm going to hack around. Mm-hmm. So what we're going to find is, we believe, Josh and I believe, that this is on the same cusp as what Apple did to the music industry. That for several years, the music industry just kind of refused. Oh, no, the pricing model it's going to be albums. It's always going to be albums. We're in charge of producing the product that gives the people the albums. It's never going to change. And Apple came along, and within several years, that completely rewrote the environment. We're not seeing a hacking work movement take over like Apple did. It may take longer than a couple years, but definitely we're heading in the path where I am now not just a portfolio of my career projects and my skills,
I'm actually carrying a toolkit with me to every job I go. I use Android, and I use this, and I use that, and I use that, and this is what I work, and you guys have to work around me because I'm a freelancer, even if I work for you full time. And more, as we're in a knowledge and service work economy, that's how workers are working. So it may take longer than the few years we saw with iTunes and each individual MP3 file or whatever kind of file you're putting across the net. But it is happening. And we can sit here and deny it all we want. We can say we have to stay in the industrial age model. But at some point, we're going to really break out of it. And what we're advocating is break out of it sooner rather than later.
We're seeing it now. Yeah. I mean, all the companies which are heralded as being innovative and very successful, you know, Zappos, Google, Netflix, Pixar, all these very cool companies, they've all got totally bizarro practices in place which are very user-centered. You know, like Pixar, 4 hours a week spending classes doing creative stuff. Netflix, vacation policy, take off as much time as you want as long as you get your job done. Google's 20%, right, which led to small products like Gmail. You know, like little things. It turns out that this sort of approach is proving very successful. The problem is that most companies aren't willing to take the risk of trying it.
No, it goes back to most companies are sort of built on the industrial model.
The main ones we can cite are the more new digital era ones is because they didn't have the infrastructure based on the file cabinets and the exact process and all of that, to rip down. We need to acknowledge it is hard to rip down the old way of doing it. It's easier for me to start a new company and just start from scratch. But we're all going to have to go in this direction. So what Josh and I are trying to help as consultants is help executives make that transition from where they are in order to control it to actually losing some of the control but still having the reliability that they need for shareholders. Mm-hmm. So that's what we're working toward.
It does redefine what an employee is, because if you're employed for the knowledge that you have, you go to the company, you bring that knowledge with you. In the traditional model, anything you learn from that company is, you know, belongs to them, it's their intellectual property. You can have a massive network on LinkedIn, potential customers.
Absolutely.
And that's yours. As soon as you get to the company, they want to own that.
This is great. I'm on a mailing list for a bunch of VCs and whatnot, and recently a couple of guys have started inviting high school graduates onto the list to talk about whether they should go to school. And these are super high achievers, right? Like straight A, honor grade, you know, they've been accepted to Princeton and Harvard and Carnegie Mellon. And the discussion is, should I go or not? And universally the advice has been, go for a year, skip out on all your classes, make as many friends as you can, get all the networks in place, and then go and start a company. Because what's the value of university? Well, it's not learning how to repeat information, right? That's totally useless. Instead, it's building the network and saying, yes, I went to Princeton. I didn't graduate because I had to leave to do a startup. Well, that tells a pretty good story, right? And if you have that network, then that's the primary value.
Bill Gates and Paul Allen did that.
Mm-hmm. There you go. But this is exactly what we started by doing a lot of research with Gen Y. And then it turned out that everybody hacks work. As you said, across all ages, one is totally common. But one of the things that was interesting about Gen Y is that they recognize the value of their network. So they come into your company, and whatever they learn, they're going to take to their next job, and whoever they meet, they're going to take to their next job. So really, they could care less if you're really satisfied or not, if you're not cooperating with them.
And how does a company manage that?
Carefully.
Well, it's really about a win-win relationship.
Yes.
Right now, the relationship is, especially now in the shitty economy, the relationship is more, I'm in control, I will hire you if I deem you're worthy. Everything goes in cycles. That right now it's a down economy. In the next few years, it'll turn around, and you're going to see a lot more people walking out the door because it's not a win-win relationship. And currently, even the best employers right now, most of them are defining win-win as far as benefits. Google also is renowned for some of the ridiculous benefits they give, not just money, but you know, the lunches and the playrooms and all that stuff. It goes beyond that. The win-win has to be at the work level itself. Mm. you know, at some point you run out of being able to pay for perks and benefits and healthcare. At some point you have to focus on the work itself. And that's what we're talking about, has to be the win-win. That I get the work done in a way that satisfies whoever the shareholders are, but I also get the work done in a way that I have a good work-life balance, I get my personal goals met, I'm happy. So, for example, in the first chapter, we talk about a guy named Matt, 24 years old. He went into a large company and was handed, this is how we're going to assess you. This is the performance assessment process. He said, this is crazy. You know, statistically, you know, he was 24, between 25 and 35, I'm going to have about one job every year to year and a half. Why would I even want to stay here long enough to care about your performance assessment process? So he Googled performance assessment, he created his own 17-question mashup, then he went to LinkedIn, and he said, here, you know, he found a guru in performance assessment, will you help me get it better? You know, he used his network. Then he went back to the company and said, here, this is how you will evaluate me. And HR and, you know, his manager were, like, really pissed off. But this is the future. It's much more, even in a tough economy, people realizing their career is on their shoulders, and they have to leverage their networks, their skills, their negotiation skills, their work skills, their partnering skills to build a better win-win relationship. It is currently, for some of the privileged, maybe up to 20%, it's like the 80-20 rule, maybe up to 20% of the workforce, there truly is a win-win between the company and the individual. Mm-hmm. But for the lion's share of the workforce, it's not. It's corporate-centered. And you're going to find the more we move into a knowledge and service work economy, the more the people are going to start rewriting the contract, using the tools and the infrastructure as a way to get things done.
Well, there's an upside to this. And part of it that I find very interesting, having spent lots of time in the open source world, is that it lends itself to a meritocracy, right? Like, someone called in and basically said, you know, my boss tells me that as soon as I get my work done, to stop working. Stop working because otherwise, you know, you'll make us look bad and we'll have to produce more work faster next cycle. Well, people in that position have two choices. They can go and look at lolcats, right? Or you can go and learn something. Mm-hmm. And it's not hard to learn something. There's loads of stuff online. So what I've been finding that's really interesting is the people that are getting promoted, the people that are moving up in the world, the people that are suddenly like, oh, you know what? Screw this job. I can go make more money as a freelancer. They're the people that are following their passions, that are learning things, that are competing in meritocracies, and all of a sudden you don't need the company anymore because you've become very good and valuable, mm-hmm. which is an opportunity that not everyone is prepared to grasp.
Well, and that, as Josh said, that's the upside for the individual. The upside for the organizations is we do need to move closer to more of a meritocracy where it matters what you produce, and that's what matters. And we've been talking this for a couple decades, but we're still not there. And it's probably maybe a couple decades away. So what Josh and I are talking about is the interim phase. It may take a few decades for us to hit true meritocracies in most organizations. Okay, if you're 30, that means by the end of your work life cycle, maybe we'll be hitting meritocracies. Do you want to spend the next 3 decades in bureaucracies? Or do you want to do something about it?
There will be a cultural change, I guess, as those people who've grown up with the internet move into the workplace, move into senior management in the workplace. Traditional organizations don't like teleworking. They build these huge empires, head offices, and they've got to fill the desk space. And what happens is that suddenly people come in and say, well, you don't have to work this way. You do have this, you know, open source style, distributed. Mm-hmm. You have a core group of people. Maybe there are people. The example I was talking about is a bank in the Netherlands where they have this far more open attitude.
Right.
They do have a head office, but it's only for certain types of tasks. Yeah. Everyone else can work in any way they want to work, as long as it's output driven.
So the challenge we're seeing where we need to push it a little bit further is most of the conversations now around the upcoming generation, it's do we give them permission to use Facebook? Do we give them permission to go to YouTube? we need to get way beyond that. Even the teleworker, The teleworker, that's a great thing, but I see many companies moving in that direction, not because they're being benevolent. It's the same thing as everybody proclaiming they're green. Really, what they're doing is they're repackaging and marketing cost savings things. If they recycle more, if they do all this stuff, they're saving money. Mm-hmm. So they're repackaging saving cost saving as we're going green. And at some point, that does not ring true. The same thing with teleworking. What they're realizing is real estate is so expensive. They're moving to teleworking, not necessarily because they're benevolent, because they want to cut costs. However, while they're moving to teleworking, your example is a great one that's maybe the exception to the rule, but they're not necessarily changing the work processes, the tools, the procedures that ensure that the individual can be successful. In one of the chapters in the book, we talk about a woman who had a color printer and it broke down, and then she needed a new one, and they were giving her a black, even though she was a teleworker, and she needed to produce color reports to send in to her supervisors. They gave her a black and white one because of cost reductions. Mm-hmm. Now she has to sit there, and this is the bureaucracy again. She has to sit there with highlighters, highlight green, highlight red, highlight pink, highlight yellow. Now it's costing her time and money, and the company. They're allowing a teleworker, but they haven't moved the processes and the tools and procedures to truly enable that person. Mm-hmm. When we start getting in that direction, then we're really creating a win-win.
And getting it out in the open. I mean, this is the thing, right? Is the hacking, breaking the rules right now, it's called hacking work because it's not sanctioned. If you go to your boss and your boss says, great, that saves us lots of money, let's do that, then it's called innovation.
Mm.
Right? Well, we're talking about exactly the same thing. It's just that companies are too stone blind to do anything about it. Like Google Docs, for example. Have you used them for compiling presentations at all? Have you used that? It's dead easy, right? You can collaborate with others. It makes it very easy to collaborate. Well, so we've talked to many people who go, they do all their work in Google Docs, and the last minute they migrated over to SharePoint to check it in with their boss. Dead stupid. That's totally dead stupid. But it's company policy, as you've said.
Well, it's because they have a massive enterprise license with Microsoft.
Right,
exactly.
That is a big challenge. Big challenge for people like Microsoft, but a big challenge for every company.
Right, right.
You know, you have to rethink how you do things. And if there's free software, why not use it?
Right.
Why not let staff buy their own laptops? Because some people want to use Apple, some people want to use PCs. Some people want to use tablets, whatever.
Yeah. And then they're in charge of their own IT support, so it's another cost saving. There was one research done, it was either IDC or Forrester, where they interviewed a bunch of executives, and they found that it was 20% of the executives said, yes, all my staff use Google Docs. 97% of the executives interviewed said, yes, we pay for Microsoft licenses for every desktop machine in the entire company. Well, that's one-fifth of them have just acknowledged that everyone in the office is using something entirely different that's free and superior, but they're still buying Microsoft.
It's an old model, isn't it? We've talked about the old model. It's the old model. The PC, you buy that PC, that's what it costs. Mm. You have to have Windows, you have to have Office. That's the cost of doing business. It's an old model. New things come along. But, business hasn't caught up. We want to do it this way.
Mm. But the shift, as you mentioned earlier about the PC being dead and we're moving to smartphones and a whole bunch of other stuff. But what's happening is, especially in the last 5 years, the power of those devices is greatly enhanced. What they can connect to is greatly advanced. The software that everybody's in, all the apps, everything, the whole package, the work ecology has totally shifted that for our lives, we have a computing power in the palm of our hand that entire institutions used to have in their mainframes. But what's happening is I'm sitting here going, well, I can do this for my soccer team, my football team, and I can do this for my cookies and my recipes. Why can't I do this at work?
Mm.
What's happening, yes, it's the legacy systems. We all had to buy Microsoft. Everybody, 97% or whatever, they still do. But the point is that's still company-centered. The individuals are going out and getting the same tools. At some point, the balance will shift when Google Docs becomes 40%, 50%. The masses are using a tool that's different. It will save us money
if we stop buying so much Microsoft. That's when they're going to realize it. This is going to happen. There's no stopping it. It's how can we help you maintain your risk management profile?
Actually, it was funny. Yesterday, I had a little bit of time. I was stuck here. And I was like, do you mind if I just check my email? And it took them 10 minutes to get the permissions, 10 minutes to figure out what was wrong with the password, and then 15 minutes for them to get the machine booted up. And in that time, I'd already done all my email on my phone. So by the time the machine had loaded up, I had finished my entire task and was just checking the weather.